Morning, everybody. By this point, you probably are already aware, but I'm Nicole LeBlanc, Director of Markets and Tariff with the ISO. Thanks for joining us this morning for our third session on participant-related costs for DFOs and DFO cost flow-through. I'm just going to give a few the kind of standard introductory remarks at this point, but kind of go through those, and then we'll hope to quickly get into the discussion and share the kind of the changes that we're put forward here today, and then shift into discussion. So if we could just get to the next slide, as I think all of you are aware, we are preparing a recording of this session that we will be putting on our webpage, and through that we are gathering some personal information. So through the FOIP Act, we need to flag for you that we are collecting that information, and if you have any concerns with it being shared through the release of the webinar, please let us know. Switching into the next slides around COVID updates, I think we've really, as a globe and as a province, and now as an industry and then a group of people focused on a topic, we've really evolved in the past couple months as in this kind of COVID update space. The first session, we were kind of working out the kinks of using Zoom, and now it feels like we're ready to do this as business as usual. But just want to highlight for you that kind of ISO's top priorities continue to be the well-being of staff and health of staff. We, as a group, we're slowly starting to have people transition back to the office, but it's really on a volunteer basis. And for the most part, we're continuing to work from home until September. And at that time, there might be some additional changes. But at this point, all external meetings continue to be virtual, and I expect that will be the case for the next while. Maybe the other comments to make, as I shared in the previous sessions, in the early days of the kind of pandemic response, I was focused on the core of maintaining reliability, and we've been kind of, once that is confirmed and sorted, we've been shifting to kind of looking more at overall market response and market confidence, market competitiveness. And for those of you that would have been involved or seen the outputs from Mike's CEO roundtables that he held a couple of weeks ago, kind of with the situation that's occurred in the province, really our focus is shifting to cost management across the industry value chain, ensuring simple and agile approach to our operations, and that's really with a bent of our focus on facilitating business in Alberta. So we recognize that the pandemic has impacted all the industries and the oil industry and the economy quite impactfully, and we want to make sure that we're facilitating an electricity system and electricity market that supports the economy and its recovery, and look to do that in a way of looking at cost management and streamlining our business. If we could get to the next slide, today we're going to be presenting and discussing with you where the ISO's landed on the proposal for participant related costs. You'll see if you've looked forward in the slides, we have made a bit of a shift in our proposal or in our position, and today we're going to talk through why we've made that shift and where we see we go from here, and look to answer any questions you have on both of those, and hopefully get into a discussion to build that understanding, and then have a sense of where there's support for this shift, and where there's support for how we go forward, and where there isn't, and if we can address that today or take that forward through the process. And as well as discuss next steps. So the agenda really covers that. I'll be talking through kind of what we've learned and why what drove us to make this shift, and then LaRonda is going to talk us through what the what the shift is, and then we'll loop back on next steps. And we'll pause for questions and discussion along the way, at kind of the break points in the presentation. If we could keep going through the slides here, we've got the kind of the same standard group or large group. We've got about 80 participants on the register today, so a little bit less, but still a lot of interest in this topic. Next slide. We do expect this is going to be our final in-person engagement for the participant-related cost discussion. We do expect there'll be still some back and forth in kind of us sharing information with you and seeking feedback as we go forward to filing information with the commission. But we do hope that as we've gone through this, and this has been kind of our fourth session, that you have found the process meaningful, transparent, that you do see the value that the ISO did get out of it, and hopefully that you got some value or the industry got some value of it as we look to build a shared understanding, really understand the issue, and try and move forward to build a solution that meets the principles from there. I'm going to kind of just, breeze through these next. I'm not going to talk to these slides. They are the kind of the guiding purpose that we're using that we built out at the start. And I think they still all apply, but we've seen them a couple times. I don't need to talk through them if you want to keep going. I will note, that the commission is part of the, or is here today in the same capacity that they have been in the past as kind of members of the engagement here to learn and listen and ask some questions. They're not representing the commission. And the next slide, if we want to keep going, it has been a great learning opportunity and the exploration or shared building of shared understanding that we did in session one and two, I think has helped help us understand and build out principles that we're looking to achieve. Session 2B, where we got into the detail, 2A and B, where we got into the details of the proposals. We, as you'll hear as we keep going today, we took a lot away from those two sessions and we're reflecting on it through the whole process, but a lot since the session on the 28th, to really try and come up with a proposal that we think meets what the industry needs right now. And there's a balance in that, and we're going to talk about that today. And we'll also be talking about, as I said, the steps forward that we're going to take to provide the information that's required to the commission to kind of close off the R&V process, as well as start the process to go forward in some changes of provisions. We had identified that there could be a fourth session. At this point, we don't think that will be happening. We think there'll be just the opportunity to exchange information across us and participants through kind of written process, but we can continue to assess that as we go. So that's, I think, what's the next slide? I'm going to pass it over to Jordan, where he's going to just remind us around how to use the Zoom tool and get an effective engagement, and then I'm going to be taking it back to really talk about what we have identified that has led us to change our proposal. So over to you, Jordan.
Thanks, Nicole. We'll breeze through this because, again, I think a lot of this is repeating, and most of you on the phone and webinar have seen and participated in this before. So just rules of the day. Let's keep it respectful. Let's make sure that we're balancing your time fairly. Keep an open mind for it. We've gone through a more contentious conversation challenges with that today. Can we move forward there, please, Steve? So just some quick decorum and housekeeping type notes on how we're actually going to use the tool. Given this type of engagement, we want to actually hear from you. So the way that we'd like to encourage you to participate today is to use the raise hand function. And when we do have you on the phone or on the line, If you could first please lead with your name, your first and last name, and the organization that you're working for, so that everyone has a shared understanding of who you are, as a preface and context to your question. You're all going to be in listen-in mode, and the way that you signal to us that you'd like to participate is either through raise hands, or you can do that through the typing in function, just through the Q&A function within the Zoom tool. Just as a reminder, we're going to have a bias towards the hand-raising action. We do want to hear from you more than the question, the typed Q&A for it back and forth. But we will pause periodically to make sure that we're attending to those written questions as well. If you move on to the next slide there, Steve, perfect. So here's the way. Hopefully you're all well-versed in using these Zoom tools and digital tools in your own meetings. But if you're looking to access the system tray at the bottom, that's where you have the ability to raise your hand. I'd ask you guys just fire your hands on right now. Let's make sure that you can do it. So everyone, go ahead, raise your hand up. Yeah, see, number of people. Perfect. That's great. So go ahead and test that. That's a signal to me that you want to have some airtime too. So don't be shy about using that. And again, the written Q&A is at the bottom. If you were on the phone, if you can move on to the next slide, Steve. So if you're accessing this via conference call, the way you raise your hand is you hit *9 and then we'll unmute you on our side. You'll still have to unmute the microphone on your side. So you'll have to hit *6 after that. And then you can go through the regular event of, hey, this is me. Here's the organization we're with. Here's the questions for it. So that is the Zoom tool. Hopefully, again, you're all well-versed on that. So I'll kick it back over to Nicole for your reflections.
Thanks, Jordan. And if we can just get to the next slide, Steve, slide 19. So as many of you that have been involved through this process, you'll recall that kind of in early May, we had participants provide proposals of how we could move forward to address the participant-related cost kind of issue that we're facing currently with the unlimited liability that the substation fraction calculation creates, the kind of the uncertainty of that and how that impacts DCGs, as well as the need to kind of capture an appropriate share of costs that DCGs should be charged for the use of the interconnection facilities. So we heard the proposals in the early session 2A from external parties, and they fell into two buckets. And then you would have seen on the 28th, ISO had presented kind of a clear preference of the proposals that were presented, where we'd clearly shown that we thought a proposal that covered or captured that DCGs being charged their incremental costs that they pay for the interconnection to the transmission facility, plus a share or a contribution to the existing infrastructure was the proposal that we were in support of. And on the 28th, we started talking about what would the details of such a proposal look like, leveraging the information that had been put forward by external parties. And we presented kind of these five questions or topics that we felt needed to be further resolved and looked into, with big the meatier ones being: how do you determine what the megawatt charge is, and all the trade-offs across accuracy of information or availability of information that and getting to a charge that reflects the share or the usage by the DCG of that interconnection facility, as well as decisions around one charge for the entire province or varying it by substations and looking to, with the intent of trying to look at how do you get an effective signal or an efficient signal that provides certainty to DCG parties but also reflects the share or the value that they're getting from using the interconnection facilities that exist. And the other meatier one was about, and kind of, which to some degree fits in everything that I just said, and what units or megawatts or usage are you basing that charge on, as well as all the administrative aspects of how do you put that charge into, we at the time we were thinking in the ISO tariff, and then address the kind of the flows of funds to manage that. And as we talked through those things, I think we at the 28th we heard that there was a lot of decisions or details to be sorted, as well as that overarching higher question of, well, what should there be a charge, and how do you decide what is fair, and how do you decide what is appropriate, and how do you capture the all of that, the underlying value or drivers that you might want to put on DC or provide to DCGs to guide them in connecting at different places in the distribution system where they might be able to provide value. And so if we could just go to the next slide, I think we stepped out of the 28th and kind of stepped out of the session after talking about all of the details of how you'd look to implement this sort of charge, and stepped, I think, way back and reminded ourselves that the Alberta or the electricity industry as a whole, and Alberta's as well, is on the brink of what we expect is going to be transformational change. And a lot of that change is happening at that distribution level. We talk that many of you were likely listening into the AUC's distribution system inquiry yesterday. And I think that all gave us a flavor of the exciting journey we're going to be on for the next 5, 10, 15 years as we look as the kind of technology and consumers and the industry looks to unlock decarbonization through the use of digitalization and decentralization. The regulatory paradigms that we're working in are going to be evolving and changing to capture the value that the system can bring, that those new technologies will unlock, as well as kind of how will it be evolving as an industry, given the kind of the changing needs that the industry is going to have to bring to the economy and to consumers. And I think that is just an overarching umbrella that started to influence our thinking of, well, what is the right step to solve this particular issue right now, and how do we make sure that what we put forward is going to be robust and aligned with that longer term path? We could just get to the next slide 21. I think you are all well aware that there's a whole range of initiatives happening right now within the Alberta regulatory landscape. The distribution system inquiry is one where it was closed off with some pretty clear perspectives from the commission of kind of like that was the first step in setting out what will be the regulatory schedule or strategy going forward to investigate various aspects of the distribution system kind of regulatory construct and how to evolve it to integrate DER. We've also, as many of you are aware, the ISO's got a lot of work underway around the bulk and regional tariff design and evaluating the signals that are the 12 CP signal that's provided through the bulk rate. And we're asking ourselves, how do we ensure that rate is aligned with the long-term kind of use of the grid and ensuring that there's efficient use of infrastructure. And there's also work underway where we're coordinating across the distribution and planning framework that the ISO is leading right now with transmission and distribution stakeholders as well as others. And this engagement is kind of one small slice in all of that change that's happening or all that evolution that's occurring. We were left with, well, what's the right step forward at this point in time on participant related costs for DFOs, knowing that what will come out of these other pieces is likely going to be bigger, more strategic steps that will take us towards the kind of the evolution that the industry is going to go forward with. And we don't see that the participant-related cost piece is a driving force. It's more of a how do we adapt it to make sure it aligns with these other pieces, although those the other pieces haven't truly been solved yet. So if we go to the next slide on 2021, that's kind of the conclusion, kind of that overarching umbrella then guided us to ask a couple other questions. And a big one being, is the ISO tariff really the right place to be putting this charge? And that kind of layers in a couple additional questions from there of like, is it the right time to be putting it in there? Does it bring value? Does it align with the kind of the intent of the ISO tariff of allocating out transmission costs? Is it the right place to determine the kind of the value that DCG brings to the distribution system and the cost that they should be charged for the facilities that they're using? And is it going to set us up for that long-term success in the significant transformation that we're undergoing? And we landed with no. And why is that? There's a couple of reasons. The ISO, and you'll probably start hearing more about this from us. We think that we need to be focused right now in tariff design and making sure that the cost allocation signals are efficient. So that really comes back to looking at bulk and regional rates and ensuring that they're sending efficient long-term signals for consumers of how they're going to be charged for the use of the grid and having them respond efficiently to those signals. And we're also in that one we've been talking about for a while now. The other aspect that you'll start to hear more about is our focus on modernizing the ISO tariff. We think the way that we're going to be able to get the ISO tariff ready for this transformation is to simplify it and streamline it. Maybe the more streamlined it is, the more we expect we'll be able to agilely respond at a fast pace to the changing landscape. And when where we are now is maybe not as streamlined as we'd like to be, where you've got kind of too many levers that are all kind of designed in a way to nuance or solve a very focused problem. When the problem changes, your design falls apart, and maybe the substation fraction and participant related cost is an example of that. And so we want to look for ways of how do we make sure that the tariff, the rates and the terms and the conditions or the components of it are simple enough that they can kind of adapt as the use of the grid is changing. So those two components of kind of, well, what are we focused? The two aspects of is a ISO tariff the right place for a DCG charge, and does it align with kind of our focus or our vision for the tariff? Were the two questions that we posed, and it both started to push us towards. Towards no, and the next slide I think captures that kind of our a conclusion of that on slide 23. We got to a place of, well, it doesn't seem like a great fit. And then if we go to the next slide on slide 24, I think we also got to, well, maybe there's actually also better reasons that if there should be a charge for DCG's use of existing interconnection facilities, that the DFO tariff might actually be a better place for that. And in the sense that the DFOs will have a better set of information and knowledge around what facilities the DCGs would actually be using or what portion of them and what are those costs, as well as a better sense of as the that broader landscape changes and we're looking for or we're looking to unlock ways to use DCG to kind of extend the capability of the distribution system further, that the DFOs and their tariffs will be able to ensure that there's like better alignment of of the signals that are trying to be sent to DCGs. We wouldn't want to get to a place where, you know, there's a charge in the ISO tariff that is set one way, and then the DCG tariff or DFO tariffs are trying to guide something else or trying to use DCGs as a non-wire alternatives, and the signals are working at complete odds. But to get that adjusted, it kind of requires, you know, two tariffs to be looked at, two separate regulatory processes, and maybe a pretty lengthy amount of time. So kind of coming back again to that aspect of, well, how to best set us up, Alberta up, for this long-term transformation and kind of clear signals that can adjust and achieve what we're looking to achieve in the system. Yeah, so as we...
Let's pause here quickly. Obviously that's a big shift compared to where our previous sessions and what the discussions had till now. So initial responses, interpretations from the audience, anything that anyone wants to either ask or clarify or just respond to?
So it looks like Rob, you can go ahead.
Might need to unmute on your side as well, Robert. Okay. We'll keep on, we'll work, and we'll see if we can't get Robert going. Not seeing a ton of interest, so maybe we'll move on to LaRonde as we can get into the meat of the topic, and we'll see if we can't drum up some conversation at that point. And all Robert's right. Just, in that he pressed the wrong button.
Of course. Yeah, it took me a while to unmute myself even today. So I'm going to provide some more details. Nicole's summary, I think, gives a really good, you know, overall view of our change in our proposal, or our proposal details. But I'm going to go into it a little bit more. Just, you know, I found it really valuable in the stakeholder engagement since February to, you know, create the level setting understanding and the level setting document. And so this is more steps towards that. So just to make sure there's a common understanding, the ISO will continue with the incremental interconnection costs that are driven by that DCG, or that those DCGs would be assigned to the DCGs. And there's mechanisms in the tariff that can do that without any issue. Set substation fraction equal to 1 for DFO substations where it's distribution connected load. And this would also lead us to remove, propose to the commission to remove some provisions in the tariff where the ISO is required to deem supply-related and demand-related amounts. We feel there would be clarity and more agility provided in the tariff to remove those, and just to ensure that the understanding is that investment is provided up to your rate DTS level and is reflective of the DTS amount at the substation. We're still going through and making sure that these are the only provisions that would change in the ISO tariff. But as of now, those would be it's limited to those provisions. As well, we would need to put before the commission a change in the substation fraction definition in the CADG, or our consolidated authoritative definition glossary. And that's where you'll find the substation fraction definition. So that is all the same from May. Next slide, Steve. Oh, I don't have slide numbers here. So I'm sorry. Or I can't.
You're on slide 27 right now, Laurent.
Thank you. I can't see, and I don't know how to make that bottom thing go away. I don't know why I'm having so many technical difficulties today. So as Nicole highlighted for everyone, the adjustment to the proposal is no DCG charge included in the transmission tariff. But as she also laid out, that a mechanism may be required in the DFO tariffs to charge the DCGs for the use of their existing interconnection facilities paid for by the load. Thanks, Steve. You have to help me out with the slide number. So following up, this is just further details on our reflections, the intense amount of work we did over this last month. We thought we would be going through the list of costs applicable to connecting market participants. Instead, we spent the time challenging and looking for efficiencies, best ways to achieve principles, and all the things that Nicole laid out. So we're looking at the suitability of the transmission tariff. Could we put something into the transmission tariff that results in additional complexity in the end that drives inefficiencies, drives behaviors that don't result in value to load? We still believe that reaching parity between T and G in principle is appropriate, but it could be problematic in our transmission tariff, as some of the issues that Nicole laid out and you know, listening to the inquiry yesterday also highlighted some of those things. Our understanding is that the DFOs have better information and knowledge and know how the cost sharing should occur and how the value could flow to generators to load from DCGs. So this, it just really needs to be highlighted that these are proposals that the ISO is going to put before the commission, as in putting towards a report to be filed in the R&Bs that are right now in front of the commission. And we will support the changes that I've highlighted before, that we will also highlight the overall need for this cost causation principles to be evaluated for DFO load and generation, and that there's an importance of adjusting the investment level at pods as DCGs are added. We are going to be, you know, the argument that we are relying on for changing the substation fraction is that generation is added on DFO systems or distribution systems for very different reasons and very different drivers than a non-DFO market participant. Next slide. As I said, some of this is repetitive. We just wanted to be clear so people had a really good common understanding of the detail. So step by step, remove the provisions in the transmission tariff that determine supply over demand related amounts, revise the definition in the CADG. And then the third thing is this will impact pod charges, monthly pod charges under rate DTS at substations where the fraction would be made to one. As investment is increased to fix the clawback of investment, then also the pod charges would have to be adjusted. Now, this will be a step that ISO will be working with the DFOs to determine that this is appropriately done, that at the end, there's no transmission rate payers impact for this type of an adjustment between investment increased and pod charges increase. So that's another step to be done, and the ISO will be working with DFOs to ensure that this is done appropriately and transparently and clarity provided to the commission on how we're going to do that. Next slide, Steve. So I think a lot of market participants, people on the call today, we'll be wondering, what about their site? What about their project? If you have a rate STS at a substation that's effective already today, our understanding is the commission directed Fortis to refrain from issuing CCD-related invoices. So in regards to those substations, our intent is to revise and issue updated CCDs. This is upon the commission directing us to do that, and as well as the applicability of the substation fraction equals for one to be made retroactive. Our initial review looks like going back to December 1st, 2015 to capture these CCDs that are, or these invoices being held back. This is a sum of 69 megawatts, so not a large number of megawatts. It just allows us to be able to kind of go substation by substation and ensure we're taking the right steps here. And like I said, we need to ensure that the contribution is that's refunded to the DFO from the TFO aligns with the pod charges to minimize or ideally remove any impact to transmission ratepayers. Next slide, Steve. How about a time, any questions now instead of, might be some questions, yeah.
Christine's got your hand up.
Thanks, Jordan. This is Christine Renge with Power Advisory for the DCG Consortium. I have a question on slide 31. I just want to make sure I understand where we're going back to when we talk about recalculating old SCD or old CCDs with a rate SES effective December 1st, 2015. We're thinking about projects that went into service on or after that date would get all of their CCDs recalculated, whereas projects that were in service prior to that wouldn't get CCDs recalculated even if the CCDs came out recently?
Well, if we're tying to that comp or that direction by the commission, if there's an invoice that's been held back by Fortis, those projects. So my initial review, like I stated, looked like December 1st effective date for a rate STS. Okay, there are some projects, I just going from memory, a very small megawatts, like one or two, we can work on those for sure. But we're trying to look for the ones that contribute the most to that 69 megawatts of existing rate STS that's impacted.
But when you're saying rate STS, you're thinking about generators, not substation upgrades?
Well, so if the generator is added, a rate STS contract is issued, let's say December 1st, 2015, and then there's an upgrade that happens 2 years later and a CCD issued, that CCD would then be impacted because the December 1st, 2015 CCD had a substation fraction of one.
Yeah, so I understand that scenario. Maybe I'll give you a different scenario. What if the rate STS contract came into effect in 2013, so years before, but the substation was upgraded in 2018, and so the CCD is brand new, and the costs that are allocated are new, the invoices haven't been paid yet, but it's just that the generator has been in service for a long time. Are we saying that those don't qualify for recalculation?
That's our initial plan, yes.
Okay, thank you.
See, Raj, you've got your hand up as well. Get Raj unmuted.
Hi. Naranda, you mentioned the refund of contributions. So one question is, so when incremental DCG connects, the refund of contributions would be calculated on something, based on something. I'm not sure how that's going to be calculated. The other is, you also mentioned participant-related costs. You know, there would no longer be the DCG charge to incremental DCG, but would there still be some form of participant-related costs for DCG?
That only for incremental costs that their connection causes. So participant-related costs driven by their connection would be charged directly to, they'd be directed to the DFO to be paid through the DCG.
So would that then include both system-related and POD, substation-related costs, or how would that be calculated?
If the DCG, the rate STS addition or incremental increase at a substation results in system costs, it could be system, if it's system related, it's system related.
LaRonda, maybe if we go through some of the details, it would help with some of these questions for it. So if there's these very specific questions, I might ask that people hold them until we get to that portion of the deck. Any other questions on the higher level content? And just as a note to Raj, because I saw you also had a Q&A question, we're going to handle your Q&A question during next steps. So we see it, got it. We'll handle it near the end of the session. Let's get Tony Smith with Irakana unmuted. Tony.
Hi, yeah, Tony Smith from Irakana Power. I had a question about slide 26. So the substation fractions one for substations where there's only D load, does that mean there's a different substation fraction process for feeders with multiple DCGs?
There'd be a substation fraction accounting for DTS and SDS if the market participant at the DFO substation was a transmission connected industrial customer.
So if there's more than one DCG, then the substation fraction is still one.
Yep.
Thanks. Okay, cool.
All right. Any other questions before we dig through the next section? Seeing no, so let's move on then.
Okay, as part of our, tying everything, even the change in the revised proposal to those principles that everyone spent a lot of time working on, it's a critical step. We're changing our proposal. Now, what does that mean against the principles? And I still absolutely support the value that came out of the principle-based approach at looking at this problem. I think it really highlighted what we needed to do, where the trade-offs occurred, and where we're, how to create a balance of these principles. At the end, you get a proposal that maybe it's not perfect, but it's the best achievable under the circumstances. And principally, we get to a spot where we get value. So we still looking principles 3, 4, and 5, and I'll go through them individually, but we still feel that they are achieved through the revised proposal. The DFO still have reasonable certainty to recover their cost treatment. We know that there's still work that has to be done, and likely for the DFOs to work inside their tariff to provide, other opportunities for DCGs to provide value, and then the cost causation principles being shared there. We believe our proposal is simple, easily understood, and in fact, a little bit easier. We're a little bit achieve principle 5 in a more efficient manner. Where we see some trade-offs occurring with the new proposals in principles 1 and 2, but we still see that there needs to be, of course, certainty for T&D connected generators, that at the time of their siting decision, that they know what their cost should be, that the distribution connected generators pay for their incremental interconnection cost, and then the parity and between T&D is maybe not the best achieved through the transmission tariff. As we've said before, there's a lot going on in the industry and a transformation occurring. Our grid looks a lot different today than it did 10, 12 years ago. And I think some of these inquiries are looking to determine appropriate tariff design in all of those, as well as the ISO in our bulk and regional 12CP stakeholder engagement. Again, it's difficult to create a price signal that ensures Did I get muted, unmuted? Am I okay talking?
You get muted now. For a second.
Yeah. Oh, okay, I'm good. Okay. I don't know where I got muted. But I was talking about effective price signals, and essentially we wouldn't want to put in a tariff mechanism in the transmission tariff that created a barrier for appropriate price signals in the distribution world. and to achieve as much value as possible from some of the new technologies that our industry is looking at. So principle one was the parity one between T and D, that it would be an undesired outcome if there was some signal for generators to connect on the distribution. Pardon? Okay.
Just before you do your deep dive, Richard Penn has a question. I want to get Richard in just to hear the question for the overall principles. Can we get Richard unmuted?
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
It's Richard Penn from IPCA. So if I was to summarize this, the way it sits now until changes are made in the distribution tariff, the direct transmission connected generator has to pay for the connection, but they have no longer an unhedged risk, whereas a distribution connected generator now has no payments at all, right, until the distribution tariff changes. Like, there's an asymmetry here, right? You've created a total asymmetry until the distribution tariff changes.
Can you repeat that first part of your question?
Okay, so if I'm a transmission connected generator, I have to pay for that connection, right? And if somebody else has built it, I have to give them some money back for that, correct?
That's correct.
But they don't have an unhedged risk going forward, right? With the distribution connected generator, they didn't pay for any connection, but they had an unhedged risk, right? There was an asymmetry.
Correct.
Now the distribution connected generator doesn't have an unhedged risk. That's gone away.
Right.
And they don't pay for any connection until the distribution tariff changes. So you punted it all to the distribution tariff, correct?
They'll pay their incremental charges that they cause, but they won't be, unless there's something added to it, the DFO's tariff, they wouldn't be paying a charge for the use of the existing infrastructure that was built to meet the DFO load. Yeah.
Right. So it means now there's even a greater incentive to connect to the distribution. Until the distribution tariff changes, there's a greater incentive to connect to the distribution system than there is on a megawatt basis, right?
Right, Richard. I would say it's a different signal because even with the existing substation fraction charge, we would have DCGs mining for substations where there'd been no projects in the last 20 years. So it's not whether they're not paying for anything. They were looking for sites where they would not have to be allocated any costs for a prior project. But did it result in generation being added at substations where there's value, where it can lead to reduced costs for load?
But you've reduced their unhedged risk. You've eliminated their unhedged risk until something changes in the distribution tariff.
Right. We've removed that future liability. So if the DFO wants to make improvements at a substation and the substation fraction allocation allocated supply related cost of that project to DCG, then that is now gone with the substation fraction equals to one. If the DFO needed to put facilities in that were required because of more DCG or more rate STS, then those costs would be allocated to the DCG.
Right. So from my perspective anyway, you've increased the asymmetry between the transmission connected generator and a distribution connected generator until the distribution tariff changes.
Yes.
We're recognizing that and the fact that we've tinted our box red. We sought out to, or that's the trade-off that's captured in how do you provide or address that uncertainty, that unhedged risk that they faced. As we looked, it was more identifying that the substation fraction methodology really continuing to be effective as these substations are being used for different purposes. As as I mentioned, and there's a whole range of activities that are occurring in the distribution space, and I think there's some areas that we need to focus on that DCG credits being one of them, of a strong incentive to locate or site on the DCG system, that the value is, I think, questionable. Is that credit incenting something that's creating efficiency for the system? And I think that's a bigger area that as an industry we should be focusing on, and as opposed to really reworking the substation fraction methodology or trying to find an ISO charge in the tariff to address the parity issue. I think there may be other areas of other issues of parity that are better addressed right now first. But however, we do recognize that we are not addressing the parity issue completely, not meeting principle one completely with this proposal.
Nicole, when, you know, there is a huge issue with the distribution, with the credit issue, but ultimately will you end up coming to the same conclusion on the distribution credit as a substation fraction, that it's a distribution tariff issue, and that you'll leave it to the distribution tariff to deal with, and just walk away from that too?
No, I think it is a distribution tariff issue. The ISO has made its comments in the 2018 GTA, as well as the distribution system inquiry, around its views of the effectiveness of the DCG credit. I think where it gets to is what we can control is what we put in the ISO tariff, and we landed at a place of the DCG charge. If we put it in the ISO tariff, we could end up with something that looks like DCG credits, where it's kind of disconnected of you built it for one reason at a point in time, and then everything else around it changed. And does it still make sense? And so I don't think we kind of landed at a place of, we could develop this charge in the ISO tariff, but then where will these DFO tariffs go? And would it still align with the incentives and signals that they're trying to send? Or are we just kind of ending up with a different issue several years from now?
And maybe put another way, Richard, too. So I think your observation's fair. And I really, when I hear the ISO talking about the approach that it's taking, I hear, yeah, we heard you about the parts of this that are most broken right now. So here's a solution for that. But let's not try to tackle it with this scope. There's other better vehicles and mechanisms. So the immediate treatment is going to leave that open for it. I think your point's very fair there, but the intention there is to absolutely work and address that. So is it a timing perspective? Very fair, but I would lean more into the intent in that. Is that fair, Nicole?
No.
Yeah, I think the other part is that we're making this proposal, but it will require, as LaRonda went through, changes to the tariff that the commission will have to adjudicate on and kind of confirm it's the right balance.
Yeah, let's get Julia in for your question. Thank you, Richard. Do we have Julia yet? I think you're on now, Julia. Nope, don't have Julia quite yet.
She's unmuted, so she can start talking.
She just put her hand up and went to go grab a coffee, maybe. Let's go to Ed. Let's go to Ed quickly, and we'll see if we can't find Julia.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
Great. So I just wanted to respond a bit to what Richard was talking about. It seems like where you landed was that the distribution firm, the DCG, will connect and they'll pay their actual connection costs that they cause to the transmission system. And this would be exactly the same as a generator that connects to the transmission system that would pay its actual connection costs. So a generator might connect to the transmission system with a T-tap or an in-out, and if it goes with an in-out, it might pay quadruple the cost. So a lot might choose the T-tap, and that'll be their lower cost connection, and that's what they'll have to pay to connect. And similarly now, you'll have the distribution firm, or the DCG, being connected to the distribution system, but paying their actual connection costs that they charge on the transmission system. So it seems to me that there's that's parity. Like, they're both paying their actual cost to connect. And we're not going to create some fictitious cost on DCGs for that theoretically say this is a fair cost, which I think, you know, makes a lot of sense. So just to put another perspective out there, I think that the balance that you have here on the connection cost is appropriate.
Thanks, Ed. Julia.
I think the part that the example, like if I can switch your example a little bit of, in, as you mentioned, if that transmission, say it's a T-tap connection, yeah, if it's to the transmission system, then yes, the generator has to pay for that connection. If for example, though, say it's a T-tap into somebody else, another generator's connection to the transmission system, then the shared facility provisions in our tariff would mean that the generator would also have to pay for a share of the transmission line that would connect to the transmission system. And that might be maybe a more appropriate parallel to the distribution system, where the generator is connecting and they pay the DCG is connecting and they pay their incremental charges to connect to the transmission system, but they're not paying a share of the interconnection that exists for the DFO loads.
Well, yeah, I don't know that that's a good example that shows something that's comparable, because on the, you know, I think what we want to charge customers is what they actually cause cost to happen on the system. And so if a DCG connects and they can do it cheaply on the transmission system, then they pay this actual cost. Now, the DCG is still paying its connection costs on the distribution system, which can be substantial depending upon the amount of line that they have to build. But they also have to put in their own, substation from a distribution perspective. So I would think that, you know, the way that you're doing it is fair and appropriate. Now, typically, you know, when you have a generator connect with a load at a transmission substation, then typically it's the same customer. And then what the ISO wants to do with the substation fraction is ensure that customer doesn't get full investment for the DTS side with that, so that there's parity there. And I think that's appropriate. So I think finding a connection where a generator is going to connect that isn't owned by the same company or related in some way or through a transaction, I mean, that's going to be hard to find. So I think, you know, I think you've landed in a good place. And if the distribution firms want to do something different, I guess that'll be up to them.
Okay. Thanks, Ed. I see Julia's got her hand up again. Can we get Julia unmuted?
Hi there. Can you hear me this time?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Sorry, I had a problem with my microphone. Julia Siglione here with Kalina Power. I just want to respond to, I believe, Richard's comment, but also lend some support to the last speaker's comment. I think it's fair to say that Distributed generators not only pay their incremental costs on the distribution system, but if there are any upgrades to transmission caused by them, you know, they pay for that as well. So I just didn't want to have it mischaracterized that distributed generators get a free ride, because they don't. And I think what I'm seeing here with the revised proposal with the ASO is certainly a step in the right direction. And to your earlier comment, I think it was Nicole, where you're looking to, you know, remove barriers to entry, facilitate business in Alberta. I think this is a good step forward.
Thank you, Julia. Richard, do you want to respond to that at all in any way? Yeah, so let's get Richard, then we'll go to Raj. Do we have Richard yet?
Okay. Thanks. No, I think you can hear me now, Jordan?
Yes, we can, Richard.
Okay. The asymmetry exists, and I guess you'll have to leave it to the distribution tariff whenever that changes, but the asymmetry exists and it's reinforced. And no matter what you say, it's going to be there. So it'll be up to the distribution tariff to sort this out. That's where it's going. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Richard. Let's go to Raj, and then we'll go to Colin.
Hi. I just want to go back to the comment by Ed and talking about parity. So if you take a generator, a traditional generator, they connect and they own the substation when they inject power into the system. At least the majority of them, to my knowledge, own their own substation. And then when you come to industrial systems, co-generators, similarly, they are required to identify a substation fraction and potentially for the supply side and on the demand side, they would have to pay a cost associated with accessing the system as well as for egressing the system. And then when you come to distributed generation, I don't see how that same principle is being applied. Because if you take the incremental approach where you're saying, you know, any incremental cost caused by the DCG is going to be charged, and there will not be a DCG charge based on an embedded approach, There appears to be a deviation for DCG, which differs from the treatment for both transmission access as well as for generators. So this is an issue I have raised before. I made this submission, this comment in my submission to the ASO. So I'm just making this comment, and seems like it is. What you're proposing now does not seem to reconcile that disparity.
Veron, did you want to respond to that before we go to Colin?
Raj, again, right now, the pod charges, the participant-related costs that we're talking about, that is for it really to investment. The changes that ISO's tariff is making is in how we determine the appropriate investment. And as well as there's this part of sharing of the costs that we're stepping back from that we think is more appropriate in the DFO tariff. What you're talking about, like you and I discussed, that's not a pod charge. It's something else. It's something new. And I think it's a good discussion broader than just DCG at the bulk and regional tariff redesign work.
Perfect. Raj, any closing comments to that at all? Just quickly before I lose you.
I have had this conversation, and I just wanted to note that that disparity does exist, and I don't know whether it's something that could be corrected at the distribution tariff level, but rather it's more a conceptual issue as to the question of equal access or non-discriminatory access for all sorts of generation, whether it be transmission connected generation or direct connect generation or distribution connected generation. There should be the principle of equal access or non-discriminatory access should be the principle that should be upheld. So anyway, I take your point that you may be reviewing that at some later point, but at this point, that disparity does exist.
All right. Thanks, Raj. Let's go to Colin Robb with Capital Power.
Hi. Thanks, Colin Robb with Capital Power. I'd like to lend some support to Richard's comments here. I think without a doubt, you've created a scenario that reinforces a treatment that is not achieving parity between transmission and distribution connected generation. We sat through the distribution inquiry yesterday, and it was pretty clear a lot of the experts' views on this was that the proliferation of DCG is, we're talking a matter of years, not decades. And so I see the situation that's being created here. I don't disagree that this is probably best suited to a DFO tariff, but we are creating a situation where we will have a period of time where this will encourage proliferation of distribution connected generation at the expense of other generation, because it's not an equal treatment. And I believe that outcome falls, and what comes of that situation is directly going to impact the duties of the ISO. And so I think to the extent that there is an option, I think an application has to consider what that interim period looks like until DFO tariffs are updated. I don't think you can just reinforce this inequity and leave it to that regular DFO tariff update cycle, knowing that there will be immediate impacts to market fundamentals because of that treatment.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, Rob, both in support of Richard's comment that this solution does create a period of time where there is further inequity, in your opinion, through the resolution of some of the unhedged risk that was previously over top of DCG, and you'd look to some type of additional treatment that kind of trues up TGen or brings a bit more parity for that period of time. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah. I think you need to address somehow in your application that there will be a period of time until those DFO tariffs are updated where there is inequity, and that timing is uncertain. And so I think it has to be acknowledged, for one, in the application, and I think it has to be addressed with some sort of interim solution to ensure there is appropriate cost sharing for existing facilities for DCGs.
Okay. Thanks, Colin. Miranda, I'm going to propose that we move through the principles, the rest of the stuff, and pause at the conclusion and see if any other questions emerge at that point.
Sure, that's good. Yeah, and I think the questions on principle one is exactly the right spot to have this conversation, right? This is where we really challenged ourselves to think about this, what was the best path forward, and maybe it's not the perfect path forward. And like we heard yesterday, there is no perfect rate design. So what we're trying to hear is get the balance of trade-offs and outcome in the end that is something that provides value. Okay, so slide 35. So, and again, I think this principle is exactly what the conversation was talking about, where Colin and Richard were talking about the parity, those costs that enable your connection to avail yourself of the grid, you know, the value of the grid, the access to market, the access to DCG credits come from facilities that are built and paid for by load in this case. And again, we still feel that the most appropriate way to determine those costs, the sharing of those costs, would be in the DFO tariff, acknowledging this interim, this period of time. And I take your comments, Colin, on that. So I don't know if there's any more questions, but I really think principle one and two align here in the TD parity. And it looks like Miles has raised his hand.
Yeah, we can take Miles here. You can go ahead and unmute on your end, Miles.
Good morning, Miles Stroh here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, Fortis, Alberta. I just can't stay quiet any longer here. This expectation that, you know, the ISO has basically stuck with principles one and two for 2.5 years now. So when we challenged the substation fraction back early in the ISO tariff proceeding, you know, the ISO doubled down on this sharing of shared system costs that exist already. The tariffs have always had the interconnection costs. So I guess my question is, you know, what has caused the ISO to back off on principles one and two when it is steadfastly defended those as the proper way to go for the last few years? And don't get me wrong. I mean, I think, you know, this whole idea of going back to interconnection costs, it's back to the future, right? But this expectation that somehow the ISO is going to absolve itself of allocation of its costs to STS and DTS and then distribution utilities are somehow going to reallocate DTS costs over to STS costs, you know, we just don't see that happening. So I guess, you know, just asking here, you know, we're a bit perplexed by this idea that the distribution tariffs are going to solve this. This is a transmission cost allocation issue, which is firmly set in the ISO tariff. And distribution tariffs only flow through those costs to supplier load as determined by the ISO. So could you just help us with that a little bit?
Yeah, I guess it's really driven by the fact that as we look at the future, the kind of as a mark in the structure of the tariff design as a market participant, a DFO is a market participant, and you your kind of the use of the infrastructure that you, the interconnection that the DFO has to the transmission system will likely be used in new ways, and that the previous STS and DTS allocation might not be robust to going forward. And I guess that, and then through that, we've landed in the place of, we think that the DFO as market participants will be able to best define how that use or the value is being provided from that interconnection and allocate that out as you see fit or you is deemed appropriate through your tariff.
Yeah, but the ISO is the sole provider of system access service, and it collects all of its costs. Its ISO revenue requirement, if you will, which includes TFO costs, and it allocates those to two rates, load, DTS, and supply, STS. the reason we're all here today is because of the substation fraction allocating a portion of those costs, transmission costs, to STS. And so is the ISO saying that they're not willing to stand behind their allocation to load and supply? Because I mean, to just throw this over the fence to the distribution tariffs and say that the, you know, the commission and the DFOs and the DFO customers will figure this out. I mean, we've seen already this morning that, you know, there seems to be, you know, tension between load and generation in terms of who pays costs, right? So by the ISO absolving itself and just walking away from this and throwing this down, I mean, it's one thing to say, hey, we're going to go back to the future, we're going to go back to interconnection costs. But then to throw the issue, which is why we're all here, substation fraction and the flow through of distribution tariffs to DCG, you know, to just throw that to the distribution tariffs and say, you know, it's going to be solved there. The distribution tariffs are not going to solve an issue of allocation to STS and DTS at the ISO tariff level.
No, it won't be at the ISO tariff level, because setting the substation fraction to one will mean that it's all defined as DTS. I think what, I guess how we would maybe rephrase it is then, if there's a value or a share of which the that should be paid by the DCGs to for the use of that interconnection, that it would be better determined in the DFO tariffs, because it would allow it to use information that or be more adapted and more aligned and adapting with how the DFO system is evolving and using distribution connected generation on the distribution system. Also capture, kind of evolve it more independently as the different DFO systems evolve, and not end up kind of with one big overarching charge that the ISO tariff is either always trying to catch up on, or setting maybe a less effective signal, or kind of breaking what can be done on the distribution system, or not allowing for the right efficient signal to be sent through on how to use the distribution system.
Miles, in response to that?
Well, I don't see, you know, I mean, we're still perplexed by, you know, the ISO's view that somehow DFOs will reallocate between DTS and STS costs. You know, the tariff framework is such that transmission costs in general, whether they be contributions for STS or DTS, or the ongoing STS losses or ongoing DTS, you know, pod and bulk system charges, that those are all reallocated by DFOs to its rate classes, right? I don't see how we as DFOs are in any position to interfere with that rate signal being sent by the ISO to customers. So in our view, this needs to be solved at the ISO tariff level. To revert back to interconnection costs, which we would support. I mean, that's one thing, but then for the ISO to come out and say that, you know what, we just solved the problem, but we're going to just shift, we're not going to let it die. We're just going to shift it down to the DFO distribution tariff level and wash our hands of it. It seems to be not very productive or helpful.
So Miles, am I understanding you correctly that maybe the overall design on a forward-looking basis is something that's amenable, that you can live with, that Fortis would be supportive of, and it's really this reallocation, that the rear-looking reallocation activity of CCDs that you're having heartache about right now. Am I understanding that correctly?
Well, that's right. I mean, that's what this these technical sessions are all about. It's about finding a substitute for the substation fraction or walking away from it. We were essentially led down the garden path in our proposal by the ISO to meet principles 1 and 2, okay, and that we essentially made a proposal here, supporting where the ISO wanted to go, and now the ISO is essentially walking away from principles 1 and 2, and not only doing that, but not solving the problem, but suggesting that it's somehow going to be resolved in the future. And don't get me wrong. I mean, I do believe the DSI is the place to discuss, the DER roadmap and all these sort of things. And there's all kinds of costs that DCGs may or may not pay moving forward, right? And the DCG credits, which again, were a result of a change to the transmission metering practice back in 2000. Right? That was the start of option M. And so, we're at a place here where, the DFO tariffs will, at the end of the day, have to bring all these pieces together and make sure that, that the DCG pays for their appropriate costs as per the regulations and the tariff structures we have in the province. And that they get, paid credits for whatever value they bring to the system. But as far as substation fraction goes and STS contributions, what happens at the ISO tariff level will be flowed through to our customers, whether they be load or supply. And that's what distribution tariffs do. So. To suggest that somehow there'll be another reallocation of transmission costs by DFOs, I just don't see that happening.
Okay. Thanks, Miles. I want to go to Dennis, and I saw Richard Berry had his hand up, but it seems like that's gone away. So let's go to Dennis here. Dennis, you should be live now.
So can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay, wonderful. So I have the same opinion as Miles does in terms of this doesn't belong at all. Yeah.
We can hear you, but we can hear you very poorly. Is there a chance you can get closer to your mic? Or?
I see. Does that help at all? Can you hear me better?
Very little. We'll do our best.
Okay. I'm not sure how to increase my volume, so I'll just speak louder. I have the same opinion as Miles in that this does not belong in a DFO tariff. It raises a lot of questions, quite apart from whether it belongs there or not, but in terms of delay and consistency and retroactivity, should it show up in a DFO tariff? And I think that principle number two, which points to causation, is the key. And that also addresses the concerns raised by Raj and Colin and Richard in terms of they seem to believe that somehow DCG should be paying for the privilege of being tied to the transmission system through the substation. And this is a nice kind of a motherhood concept and a principle to believe in. But if you think of any specific examples, I think you discover that it's a little bit, it has to be understood. So the Bull Creek example is a very public and well-documented one. And at the hardest, at the Hayter substation, which was old enough that it didn't have to be cost sharing, Blue Earth set up the Bull Creek wind farm. And then almost coincidental with their setup, Fortis required or requested the addition of a second transformer. The original transformer was 47 MVA, big enough to handle the 29 MVA DCG. Complete, they didn't need a second transformer. But because Fortis wanted a second transformer to meet the reliability needs of load customers, that $5 million charge based on contract capacities is now being allocated between supply and load. But the driver was load's need. Load needed that second transformer for reliability provided, as demonstrated in the session one, I believe, that it provided negligible benefit for DCG. But somehow, some people who don't understand the depth of detail here think that Blue Earth should be paying a portion of that cost, even though they didn't ask for it, didn't want it, and didn't need it. So the causation, I think, has to be looked at as to who pays for things. So I just want to leave that with people to understand. You can't just think of high-level principles. You have to dig down into the details and trust the real principles of causation at that level.
Okay. Thanks, Dennis. All right, LaRonda, why don't we move through the rest of the principal discussion here?
Okay. So we're on moving to slide 36 on principle 3. Our revised proposal still maintains the certainty of future cost and stability for DCG and the transmission tariff, and that they would have cost certainty about charges or as what Dennis was referring to, a future cost that the DFO puts into place on their substation resulting from reliability or other drivers on the DFO side. On slide 37, cost certainty, DFOs should be provided reasonable certainty to recover cost treatment. The ISO believes that this still ensures this principle that we'll be determining the contribution based on investment approved by the commission up to the rate DTS contract capacity at those substations we've discussed. And principle 5, looking towards what Nicole kind of highlighted at the beginning on the overall lens that the ISO is viewing this kind of work. We're looking for simplicity, stability, and even agility as we move for more changes in the way that power moves on the grid and what you consider as a market participant, what type of load sinks, supply sinks are in the province, how those are changing. And we believe in removing those supply and demand related requirements that essentially the ISO in determining how much investment is applicable is looking at the rate DTS contract capacity and not determining what is supply related and what is demand related. We're calculating a contribution based on the investment methodology approved by the commission. And we believe this will set us up for future changes as technology is continuing to shift and change what we think of as load and generation. So, again, we've got some more slides here. If you can move to the next slide, Steve, on slide 40. These are the provisions that are in the tariff that we would propose to remove, where it talks about how the ISO must determine supply and demand related. Slide 41 should talk about where the historical view of those provisions came from. And there's a lot of history to it where you're looking at how costs should be appropriately shared, how investment is determined. We believe that those provisions resulted in some complexity that wasn't required and resulted in inadvertent outcomes. And our intent is to simplify that those pod cost charges are to recover investment, and investment is provided to the load portion of the substation. In the case of a DFO, where DCG is added, that the full DTS contract capacity is considered the maximum investment available for investment. And the substation fraction that is shown in our CADG talks about the sharing or the ratio of rate DTS and STS. We would need to add
to revise the definition to say that legal owners of distribution facilities, the substation fraction for load would be equal to one. On slide 43, again, like I said, the substation fraction is still included in the investment formula. And this substation fraction would now impact the DTS monthly pod charges. And the leaning we're going, our argument towards changing the substation fraction is that DFOs add generation to their substations for very different reasons, very different drivers. And it is fairly requires investment to be up to the level of the rate DTS and not clawed back due to the amount of generation added at the substation. So a kind of a touch on next steps, the way we think it would go would be that we would submit our report and the RNVs. And at that time, the report would be a full comprehensive summary. It wouldn't be a summary. It would be a lot of a large report documenting all that we learned over these last 4 or 5 months. Document what we're trying to do for principles, it would document the proposals. And at that time, not sure exactly the timing, it'll be determined, but upon an application to the commission to remove those provisions and adjust the substation fraction, and the commission issues a decision on those, we would re-execute those CCDs that have been held back by the DFO. And as I said before, we need to determine how the pod monthly bills would have to be recalculated. How far back would that go? And the intent there is to ensure that there's no impact for this recalculation on all load payers in the province.
Let's pause here. If you could just go back a slide, Steve. I see, Chris, you've got a question. So let's start with that. Yeah, Chris, if you could lead with your name and your organization, please.
Yeah. Chris, do we have you? He just has to unmute.
All right, let's go to Raj while we're waiting on Chris. Can we get Raj unmuted?
Yeah, it's Raj Ratnanathan with the CCA. I just wanted to find out how this R&V application, how that would synchronize or not synchronize with the compliance filing that is before the commission. And I think in that compliance filing, the ASO has basically requested the approval of the terms and conditions as put forward here. How does this all mesh together?
We believe that the commission has all the information that is required to release a decision. I mean, I'm not speaking for them, but I don't think that what we're proposing here would impact the compliance decision. Adjusting metering practice, the grandfathering of that initiative still continues as in the compliance. This is a new application, a new look. And then the R&Bs would be, we're giving the commission the information that we can gather, a better understanding or a larger understanding how the existing provisions work on the participants flow through the cost to flow through to DCG. And then there would be a subsequent application, as the commission has directed us, to file any changes or a proposal in an application to the commission.
So do you think then they would just simply go ahead and approve whatever you have filed, and then there would be a subsequent R&V? And I'm assuming part of that R&V will also have to address the commission's finding in 22942 that substation fraction should be determined for access to the system by DCG as well as by transmission connected generation. So those are principles that they have laid out, and I think this may be a deviation from all of that.
Well, I can't speak for the commission. Unfortunately, I guess we're in a spot where, you know, our proceedings take a long time, and a lot has even changed since 5 years ago we started the 2018 tariff application. So what we're looking for is, you know, a close on that proceeding so that we can move forward with what was approved there. Not that we're saying that the substation fraction certainly does not need to reopen the 22942 proceeding.
Okay, let's try going to Chris again. Can we get Chris unmuted? You might have to unmute on your end as well, Chris. Do we have Chris?
Chris will just needs to unmute himself. Okay, I'm gonna disable the talking and re-ask.
Put their hand down now, I suppose.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Well, we're getting close into talking what about next steps are. Conversation's been interesting to date. I've heard there's a bit of contention around some of how this might actually apply. And something I'm curious and I'm interested in is how much of that's the path forward to resolve and get some resolution to the stuff that's in our history versus actually determining what the path forward is. So I think I heard from you, Miles, that yeah, on a forward-looking basis, the guidance, the direction that ICE was heading down, that makes sense. It's more this how we're actually still going to resolve the reallocation in the rearview mirror that's still causing you a little bit of angst. I heard from Richard, and supported by a couple others, that by making this decision in one way actually increases the inequity between TGen and DGen. That are and what the incentives are, and that there might be a timing issue at play here until some of the DFO tariff is further resolved and refined for it. How about some of the other participants that have been active up until today? So I haven't heard as much from maybe a Jeff from Lion's Tooth. Jeff, is there? Do you want to come on and let us know where your head's at? Or Erica, yeah, from Lion's Tooth? Can we get Erica unmuted?
Morning, everybody.
Good morning.
So I think, I mean, Lion's Tooth's opinion, having had a pretty cursory read, like everybody else, being very involved with the distribution system inquiry yesterday, is that, you know, we maintain that DCGs pay a lot of interconnection costs already, those incremental costs as part of our distribution connection, and that incremental only is the appropriate approach. And this appears to be a bit of an interim relief response. So it does pretty much kick the issue down the line a little bit further and will result in more discussion about this go forward.
Okay, thank you, Erica. Do we have ATCO on the phone, Larry, or someone else from ATCO is willing to put their hand up and speak at all? Larry.
Good morning, everyone. Larry Shaven, ATCO Electric. Good
morning, Larry.
I think, like others, we're still trying to digest the change in course. But at a very high level, and maybe at the risk of oversimplifying it, TCGs pay the cost of their step-up transformation to get from their generation voltage to transmission voltage, and then the line that they need to build to connect, and ignoring any cost sharing to a previous generator that they may tap into. DCGs pay their incremental cost to step up their generation voltage to distribution voltage, and then the cost of the line to connect. And then there's protection costs as well. All things being equal, the transmission costs that the TCG incurs will always be higher than the distribution cost, unless there's a very, very long distribution line and a very short transmission line in the comparison that's being made. And long distribution lines really don't work for large generators because of the nature of managing voltage on the distribution system. So again, not to oversimplify, but the other components of this is once a TCG is connected, they don't pay any additional costs for use of the transmission system. Once a DCG is connected, they don't pay any additional costs for use of the transmission system. So that's the bottom line. What we, as everybody has already noted, what we currently have is a situation where it's far less expensive to connect DCGs to the distribution system than it is to connect the TCG to the transmission system if they're the same size and other things being equal. So that the disparity, or I think the issue around the price signal, does remain. I do appreciate Fortis's frustration with the effort that's gone into this to date, only to essentially land at the same place that we were before. The suggestion that DFOs need to resolve the issue of cost allocation is something we'll have to think about. I would note that at the bottom of slide 41 of the ExCo's presentation, I think it noted that DFOs could allocate costs to a DCG. It's not suggesting that it must happen. To be clear, from ATCO's perspective, and with respect to the issue of discretion, we will always allocate 100% of the costs of connecting a DCG to our system if those costs are directly driven by the DCG. So there's no discretion in that respect. Those are incremental interconnection costs. Where we may land going forward with respect to something in the DFO tariff to try and address the issue of parity, or what is currently an incentive for large DCGs to connect to the distribution system, simply because it's much cheaper than connecting to the transmission system, is a matter that we'll have to think about. And as an industry, I'm not saying as ATCO, I'm not sure what the solution is. It may not be a price signal. It may be some sort of policy in terms and conditions approved by the commission that's intended to ensure that, as I've said a couple times before, maybe much to the chagrin of some generators, that transmission size generators should not be connected to the distribution system. I would note, for those who believe that we connect large loads to the distribution system, that the largest distribution transformer that ATCO Electric has in their standards and currently in service is 20 megawatts. We do not have any distribution loads larger than that. So the suggestion that a 40 megawatt load generator is similar to a 40 megawatt distribution load, those don't exist on our system. Our feeder capacity limit is about 25 megawatts for a single feeder. We don't have distribution customers connected that are larger than that. So we still have this scenario, and I know I'm running on a little bit here, where we see an incentive for large generators to connect to the distribution system. In terms of some sort of inequity between DCG and TCG, and maybe this is an obvious point, we're not talking about something that is unfair, because we're talking about the same proponents. Those generation proponents are not, it's not a TCG competing with a DCG. It's a generation proponent deciding which is the most economical way to connect their generator, either transmission connected or distribution connected. That's what's at stake here. It's not competition or fairness between different generators on a go forward investment decision. So there's a lot of things still at play here. I'm not sure how DFOs are going to resolve this at a distribution level, but I think overall what I've heard is essentially a validation of the Group 2 proposals, which essentially has said that absent some change in our current policy, load pays, and whether it be a TCG or a DCG, after they connect and pay for their incremental connection facilities, they don't pay. That's where we sit. I could go on, but I think I'm probably going long enough. Thanks.
I think that was well said, Larry. Thank you for your contribution. I saw Robert Henry, you had your hand up and it's fired down. Do you have anything you want to add, Robert, if you feel like coming back? Yeah. Let's get Robert unmuted. You might need to unmute on your end as well, Robert. Are you there, Robert? We can't hear you yet. Still nothing from Robert. Let's get Julie on while we're working on Robert's meet. Can we get Julie on? Yeah, go ahead, Julia.
I just want to lend some credence to what Larry had just said. And I think the point to take away is, as a generator, we do exactly what he said. We examine, is it more economic to connect at a distribution level or a transmission level? And it's really that simple. So there is no, like he mentioned, no competition. But it is an issue of price signal efficiency and cost causation. And those are the issues that, you know, really drive where a generator connects and how they connect.
Thanks, Julia. Let's try Robert again. Robert, can you give us a test? You might have to unmute on your end as well.
Robert, I'm just going to stop and redo this just to see if that might help. Oh, we've now lost him.
Can I just add a comment?
After, yes, please.
Let me see if we can get Robert. I just want to, you know, what Larry's comments about terms and conditions, I mean, I think that speaks to the knowledge that DFOs have and as a group to come up with the best way. And again, it's not inappropriate charging or terms and conditions, but that there's a lot of tools they have in their toolbox that the ISO doesn't have. And the last thing we want to do is put in a barrier where the DFOs can't achieve that. The most value they can get from DCG relating to the cost causation principles that everybody can agree on.
Perfect. So I don't see Robert's hand up. Maybe Robert doesn't have a microphone today. I'm teasing. There's Robert's hand up. We'll see if we can't incite him to come on the line. There we go. Robert, can you give us a test? Shows that you're still muted on your end. You might need to unmute.
All right. You guys should be able to hear me now. Sorry about that.
We can hear you now, yeah.
All right. This is Robert Henry from Peters Energy. And I was wanting to applaud Larry for, even though Larry referred to it as long, it was actually really thorough and really well said, and I support that. I want to come back to a couple of comments that were made. LaRonda mentioned that it's a very different connection between TC, transmission connected generation, and distribution connected generation. It's not, this parity concept is confusing. It's not an apple and an apple, and the consequences and the scale, there's a bunch of advantages to connecting transmission connected generation, and there's a bunch of advantages to connecting distributed generation. And Larry made the excellent point that every proponent has the opportunity to choose. That's how a market functions. And to Nicole's point, which is our overall collective goal as an industry is to make Alberta competitive. If it's cheaper to connect one way than another way, genuinely cheaper, uses existing infrastructure, doesn't demand a whole bunch more physical cost that is just cost, it drives down the cost for all the participants in the province. It makes Alberta more competitive. If it causes a swing to cause a bunch of small DGs to pop up where there's load and serve that load at a much lower addition of generation supply on the system without as big of an investment, I don't see how that's a bad thing for Alberta. And so it's very hard for all of us to step back from the individual projects we're working on or the individual interests we represent and look at the holistic for the province. And I recognize the challenge that the ISO has undertaken. And it is tough. I reflect Miles's comment. I don't really want to be talking about this for two more years, which there's a risk of that. But I think that we always have to zoom out from not which is better for T-Connect or D-Connect. What's better for Alberta? How are we going to maintain a competitive jurisdiction?
Awesome. Thank you, Robert. I want to hear from Richard, and then we'll get Raj on as well.
It's Richard Penn from IPCA. I would agree that a generator is always going to make the rational decision to decide where to connect on the transmission or the distribution system, whichever is cheaper. But if that is caused by some sort of asymmetry and the incentive is to connect on the distribution system, and that in turn strands that $17 billion we've spent on the bulk system, the load ultimately pays for that anyway. So what we want is just a fair competitive. We want fair competition between where transmission and distribution generators connect, and we just don't want all the folks saying it's a lot cheaper to connect on the distribution system. And by the way, we're going to strand all that debt and leave that with the loads to pay on the bulk system. So we just want symmetry. That's all. Because I agree, generators will always find the cheapest place to connect, but you want it to be symmetrical. You don't want these asymmetrical incentives causing people to connect in the distribution system and then stranding something on the bulk system. Thanks.
Thank you, Richard. Let's get Raj unmuted.
Sorry, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah. So with regard to the issue of price signals, I think what I'm hearing is, particularly based on ATCO's discussion, you can provide the price signal if you don't provide it at the transmission level, at the ASO tariffs level, then you could provide it through the distribution tariff approach. Now, Miles said that, you know, you cannot count on the DTS distribution tariffs to do that. But assuming that can be done, there is, apart from the tariffs and the charges to DCG, there are also the locational issues. What I'm wondering is, to the extent a DCG connects at the distribution level and receives a transmission price signal, including a GUOC type price signal for investment, the ASO is able to provide those kinds of price signals by flowing through a GUOC. Now, a distributor would not be able to do that. So there is some kind of, as the system expands and you want the system to expand in a way, whether it's at the distribution level or at the transmission level, you want to expand, see it expanding in a way that is efficient for the entire system. And so ideally you want to have a system where signals such as locational signals such as GUOC could be provided by the ASO. I'm not sure if that's something that could be provided at the distribution level.
Awesome. Thank you, Raj. So I want to call on Christine in a second just to see where the DCG consortium's heads up. But the one thing that I'm hearing is, yes, this might be hard. Yes, this might be messy, but no one's saying this is outwardly wrong. No one's saying this is not the right path holistically. Like, yes, there's challenges on the path to get there and when we can actually expect the DFO tariffs to go in, and there's a time concern, but that's just hard and messy. That's not wrong. Does anyone contest that summary or that observation at all? I see Robert's hands up, so let's hear Robert.
So I think I heard two camps, actually. I heard a camp that can't wait for the DFO tariff to put some cost back onto DCGs, and I heard a camp that thinks that incremental cost only is appropriate. And I think a unanimity might be a little premature to declare.
I think that's a fair challenge, Robert. I'll accept that. Can we get Christine Runge unmuted? Assuming you're still at your computer, Christine. Awesome.
So from our perspective, we're still also trying to digest how this would work if it was moved into a DFO tariff and then, I guess, reconsulted on and debated and put into a commission proceeding at some point in the next while. So I'm not sure I have a lot of comments from that perspective. At this point, my main focus is really just making sure that all of the CCDs that need to be recalculated are going to get recalculated. So I'm going to make sure that the dates you guys have in the slide deck work for all of my members' CCDs, and we'll let you know in the comment matrix. Jordan, I've been pretty quiet because I just don't have a lot to add with where this has evolved into.
Okay, thank you. All right, any other questions, comments, people that want to interject right now? We're going to move on to next steps here shortly if nothing else is jumping up. I see Colin, Rob. Let's get Colin unmuted.
Hi, thanks. Just before, I'll save comments on next steps till that section, but just for clarity of the record here, there's been a lot of discussion around this isn't, transmission connected generators against distribution connected generators. And certainly that is true to a point, but I think also, and the ISO is aware of this, but their own system planning studies acknowledge that proliferation of DCG reduces the bulk system capacity. And so that has a direct impact on new generators, and it has a direct impact on existing generators as well. So, to the extent that a market develops with incentives or price signals that are not enforcing parity, that has an impact on the entire market.
Thank you, Colin. All right. I see Erica. Let's get Erica muted. Lines two.
Hi there. So parity is a weird one, right? Because I think people can view parity and disparity across a couple of different avenues in a couple of different areas. So I think it's really important to recognize that there are other areas where DCG and TCG don't have parity with each other. One of them being the constrained nature of the distribution system itself. So I think we have to recognize that by addressing parity in one particular area, we may be overlooking disparity in others. So parity is a really hard thing to achieve if we're not going to achieve it sort of almost across the board.
Thanks, Erica. All right, with that, Steve, let's move forward on to the next step slide. We'll talk about what this actually means and what's happening with this specific proceeding in R&B at this time.
Yeah, so our view of next steps and these are based on kind of our understanding of the kind of the directions or the indications that the commission gave the ISO when we originally filed our letter in the R&B process that said let the ISO kind of take this offline and run an engagement and see what we can bring back as a proposal. So it's the directions that we received from the commission out of that process. Can you guys hear me okay? I'm getting a flag that it says my internet's unstable.
We can hear you good, Nicole. I'm
fine, okay. The directions from the commission were that we were to file a status report from the engagement and then any a separate application for anything that we would at the start of the process identify as a need to change provisions in the ISO tariff. So that's guiding the next steps for us. The first one being to provide a status update or an update to the commission, really summarizing the findings of this process, the engagement that we went through, the proposals that were identified, and then the one that the ISO is kind of putting forward. With that, we do also want to identify other proposals that were put forward. So we'll capture the kind of the evolution that we've been on as a group, with really the kind of incremental only, as well as the contribution with the an additional contribution above incremental, and that being identified in the ISO tariff. So that would be a bit of an information update that feeds into the R&B process, and then exactly how the commission closes off those R&Bs is with them to determine. But what we would also anticipate is that the ISO would then follow on as at a time frame kind of as quickly as we could with an application that would lay out the changes that we've identified here today to kind of evolve the ISO tariff to put forward the proposal we've laid out. And then that would initiate a separate proceeding from the current 2018 GTA, and then just a different proceeding around getting these provisions changed, where I expect we would then kind of work through some of the discussion that we had today. We'd be working through that at a proceeding level, and kind of leaving it with the commission to determine some of those parity discussions, implementability of, or is it setting up the right allocation of interconnection costs in the ISO tariff. And that's kind of where we envision it as our next steps. But what we intend to do is, as we prepare the update to the commission on this entire process, and we'll be looking to, we've been developing material as we've gone on, and we just have to kind of the final pieces for us to put forward the proposal or document up the proposal we put forward today, the feedback that we'll receive today. And what we hope or intend to do is provide a summary of that, maybe the executive summary or kind of the highlights of that for participants to review and then provide any kind of additional context or the, any written submission around kind of your support for the proposal or your lack of support for the proposal or kind of areas that you think aren't addressed appropriately enough or well enough or need to be highlighted in the summary, so that we can kind of giving you the opportunity to provide that written submission as part of the update that we provide to the commission. So kind of in the end, it would look like the ISO providing its update of all the items that I've listed here, as well as then kind of a list of attachments that come from individual parties that have a desire to kind of get something written and included into the process as well for as part of the full submission. We roughly, I think we'd be expect asking that for that sometime in August or September. And then from the perspective of application preparation, that sits with the ISO to prepare.
And just to make that crystal clear, ISO is not inviting you to edit their document. It's more you'll get a preview of the executive summary and an opportunity to append and comment on your own specific section in response to that. Is that fair, Nicole?
Yeah.
Awesome. We also, we parked Raj's written question until the next steps for it. And I think it's pertinent that we just bring it out now. Is it the intent to review your present decision in the context of the GTA, Nicole?
Yeah, and I think I believe Raj sort of posed this question to LaRonda, but we really see the GTA decision, the compliance filing that we've put forward that implements the various pieces of that decision as able to move forward as they are now, and that this this issue that we're working through can be continue to evaluate and a proceeding can start separate from the current GTA implementation.
All right. Any other questions on next steps, what you can expect here in the immediate and upcoming weeks and months? Colin?
Hi, thanks. You know, I can't help but feel like we came out of the last session with parties being quite a lot closer on resolving this issue. And, you know, I think to the ISO's DR roadmap, I think to the conclusion of the distribution system inquiry, the coordinated planning framework work that you guys are doing, and you know, I support some of the direction you're going, where you're you know, considering these holistic major system changes that we're expecting. But to sort of punt a near term issue to the DFOs, who I won't speak for them, but I felt a little bit of resistance there today. I just don't know that a proceeding, given all of that context, is actually the best route.
We've noted that, Colin, thank you. Any other comments, questions, observations? Richard, I see you're interested.
Yeah, it's Richard Penn from IPCA. I get the feeling when I remember back in high school, I read a book, I think it was called The Two Solitudes, and I get the feeling here that we're going the same way with The Two Solitudes. We're going to have the ISO dealing with transmission-connected tariffs and everything else at the DFO level, and there will be, the twain will not meet. Like, there's no interplay between the two. The ISO will simply hand down its the money it requires, and the DFOs will deal with it. Whereas before, there was a feeling that there was some sort of integration between the two. I'm starting to feel, no, it's simply the two solitudes. Thank you.
Thanks, Richard. Other closing questions, comments? Brilliant. Well, we will choose now as a time to adjourn. We're going to give you a couple of minutes back for your day.
Just final slide.
Yeah. Just need a flag that we will be putting out a short comment matrix with three questions. They will be focused on kind of getting some written feedback around where the proposal landed that will help us guide the development of the update, as well as our paths forward with an application. And that while we will be seeking your input again on the overall report, it will be helpful for us to get just some indications of where everyone's leaning before that. That'll be out today.
And Nicole, just further, we said on the slide deck July 10th, but we are extending that to July 17th.
Back to you, Jordan.
Awesome. Well, thank you all for your time and attention today. We will adjourn and call it here. And you know the proceedings from here forward. Thank you.